George Knight used to say that after the book is published, you see the mistakes. And there are a few typos here, and if you find some and you would like to call my attention, I would be very pleased. Well, the topic I will be reading this afternoon, I think, can provide a framework to understand much of the challenges that we are facing today from a historical, more sociological perspective. I am not a sociologist, but at least I have a family and have. Okay, with three children. Somebody told me that there was a single person that had seven rules how to educate children. And after he got seven children, he had no more rules left. Okay. Let me just control my time. The family is the most important building block of society. The history of civilization and culture confirms that communities comprised of well-structured families tend to prosper. While the disintegration of the family nucleus can end up breaking down the social system of the Commonwealth. But a family structure does not only influence the larger society, it is influenced by the society as well. In the last 200 plus years, several ideological and behavioral waves have left their marks on the social structures of Western civilization. Before I go into it, let me just explain. As you know, our world is not flat. So does not mean that the whole world was influenced by it. But there are trends, waves, as I mentioned here, that have influenced them. I mean the family. For instance, the industrial, feminist, sexual, technological, and cybernetic digital revolutions radically transform society or societal norms and lifestyles. But the questions that come are, but how did such changes affect the family life within the respective social structure? Furthermore, how are family changes challenging contemporary society? This article briefly highlights how marriage and family were at the same time blessed and undermined by the ideological and behavioral waves brought about by the aforementioned revolutions. Life in the agriculture and artisanal societies is just the starting point. I am not going into this. And as it was mentioned, I will mention the positive and negative elements of each one of these revolutions. We don't have time to read word by word, but at least highlight some of the main topics. First, the Industrial Revolution. In the agricultural and artisanal communities of the pre-industrial era, members of the family usually all worked together and enjoyed their leisure time, the little that they had, together. It was within the family circle that the new generations learned both cultural values and professional skills. You remember that usually this idea of keeping the professional endeavor from across generations, it was something very common. The daily interaction between parents and children tend to unite a family, developing strong bonds. Even without the commodities and efficiencies of modern life, The feeling of belonging to a well-structured family gave members the support and emotional balance needed to face the challenges of living within the larger social community. It does not mean that all families were well-structured. There were family problems in those days also, but that was a tendency at least. The transformation of pre-industrial societies into industrial ones was a gradual process that began in England at the end of the 18th century and spread soon thereafter to France, Germany, and other Western countries. The impact of this process eventually polarized the nations of the world into rich countries, industrialized, and poor countries, non-industrialized. And between these two extremes are developing countries, which only later on began to industrialize through the establishment within their own territories of multinational branch industries with headquarters in the rich countries. Social and family lives were strongly impacted by the industrialization of work process. The owners and administrators of industrial and commercial monopolies directly shared the revenues of their businesses and consequently could provide more convenience and comfort and social status to their families. But the working classes were often exploited by long working hours. And you will see that thus the working class faces serious difficulties in financially supporting a family with many children, especially if the children were under the age of employment. Labor struggles helped workers eventually secure significant employment rights, increase their purchasing power, and fostered a better lifestyle. As previously mentioned, families in the pre-industrial communities worked together. However, the industrial revolution not only removed the legendary head of the family figure from the home, but also separated the industrial work circle from the family life circle, with their lands being appropriated by huge industrial monopolies. Many families had to move to the city, where the father and sometimes even the mother and children all had to work just to survive. Within a typical work day lasting between 12 to 14 hours and living far away from the industrial place of employment, family members had almost no time left to be together. Family interactions were further damaged when the husband's father was drafted into the military and lost his life on the battlefield. In such cases, the mother and the children had to take care of themselves. Often, of the orphan children and children of poor families had to work in unhealthy and hazardous jobs at coal mines and factories. Under the new industrial work paradigm, parents and children ended up distancing themselves significantly from home. Of course, there is the positive side that the acquisition of resources and goods took place, but there was this negative element. And now comes the feminist revolution. Family structures were also impacted and reshaped by the feminist revolution. Although women tend to represent 50% or more of the population in various regions of the world, up to the 18th century, women were highly discriminated against within society. Local communities did not always pay attention to their concerns, since they were considered inferior to men. Therefore, women did not have the right to vote or even to have access to higher education. By the end of the 18th century, French women began to fight for the care of helpless people. In the United States, one of the most important initial landmarks of the feminist movement was the famous Seneca Falls Convention of July 1848. After that time, American women fought against such social evils as slavery, as another form of social discrimination, and intemperance, as threatening their own families. For those women, abstinence of alcoholic beverages would help their husbands save money otherwise spent on drinks, resulting in them being less violent at home. Unable to garner such position, positive responses to their reforms, women later began to gain more social influence through higher education and the public vote. By the 1930s and 1940s, the American feminist movement was fighting for wage equality, for women to receive the same salaries as men. However, the publication of Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystic in 1963 led the movement into a new direction. The movement assumed a true feminist psychological conscience, one that became increasingly opposed to marriage, tired of passively enduring the disrespect of their selfish and rude husbands, or the disregard of a careless and lazy husband. Many women began to see divorce as the best solution to their marital problems, considering monogamous marriage as a form of female slavery. Many militant feminists even declared themselves anti-man, anti-family, and pro-lesbian. This does not mean that everybody is in this way. Those are trends that start to emerge. Undoubtedly, the feminist revolution had many positive effects on society. It contributed to the lessening of females' domestic abuse by shining a light on this and other hidden marital struggles suffered by women. The feminist revolution has also worked to even the playing field of women in their professional and social lives, largely giving them the same rights as men, though there is much work yet to be done on this front, so the struggle is not over. Joining the labor market, women have helped to balance the family budget, especially when tightened by the husband's unemployment. Bringing their characteristic sensitiveness to the market life, women have contributed decisively to make the world more human. However, the most radical expression of the feminist revolution, just delete end up, did alter women's views on family, causing many to think twice about getting married and having children. Even among those who choose to have children, motherhood was restricted quite exclusively to pregnancy, without much concern for personally educating their young children. Consequently, as the Industrial Revolution removed the father from the home circle, the feminist revolution likewise removed the mother from that circle. So children ended up being entrusted to the care of babysitter, a domestic helper, another family member, and a daycare institution. And then comes the sexual revolution. The sexual revolution represents the third and perhaps the most detrimental ideological and behavioral trend that shaped the family. At the dawn of the 20th century, humanist philosophers were already considering the moral value of sexual abstinence outside of marriage an obsolete religious taboo that should be abandoned if human beings are to reach their full psychosocial freedom. With a growing existentialist leaning, many people began to live under the premise that no one has the right to tell others how to satisfy their own sexual impulses. Consequently, love could be expressed without a social commitment imposed by a marriage certificate. I like very much this book, The Century of Sex. It's a story of the sexual revolution. And in the foreword to that book, Hugh Hefner, and he was the publisher of Playboy magazine, he identifies three vital factors that contributed to the sexual awakening at the beginning of the 20th century. And he argues in this way that the 60s and 70s was not necessarily the sexual revolution, as some people say. That was basically the counterculture. And he believes that a sexual revolution actually started at the beginning of the century. Of course, this can be disputed. But he says that the first factor was urbanization, that freed individuals from the repressing and provincial mores as they moved into the more liberal, densely populated cities. Second, new forms of transportation allowed people to escape and to venture away from their own social circles. And third, and very significant, the advent of mass communication or the filming arts made sexual dreams visible. The sexual liberation process reaches climax within the counterculture ethic of the 1960s and 1970s. Disgusted with the irony of contemporary culture, especially that of the Vietnam War, many American young people from both sexes launched on to a catching motto, make love, not war. You know that the Vietnam War had a much stronger impact in the way how we think that people usually realize. It was a change. And some historians recognize that the year 1968 was the turning point, really. Because that year, one of the Kennedys was shot to death, Martin Luther King Jr., the uprise of the students in Paris, and it was almost a turmoil around the world. And from then on, people did not remain as rational as before, but more what I like. But this year you should not do. But I feel good about this. Why? Why should I stop it? So, it's a complete change of what some people call postmodernism. Escaping from the family circles, many decided to live in a faraway hippie colonies, finding in sex, drugs, rock and roll music, the ideal environment in which to express their sexual passions. About the same time, several American and European activist movements began to fight for the rights of homosexuals, gays, and lesbians. More recently, in the 1990s, an increasing number of people admitted publicly that they were having bisexual relationships with individuals of both sexes. In face of the growing tendency towards marriage infidelity and free sex, evolutionist psychological studies try to explain and justify one's sexual behavior based on his or her genetic and hormonal characteristics. Consequently, human beings were no longer regarded as morally responsible for their unrestrained sexual behavior. It's interesting that there is a book, I quote one here, The Myth of Monogamy, where the authors even say that in the animal world, just a little very primitive species is monogamous. All other ones are no longer. So why human beings should be? And there is an article here, Our Cheating Hearts, from Time magazine, saying also how the evolutionistic ideology or philosophy shaped our behavior. Believe or not, the sexual revolution did have some positive benefits. For one, it helped to demystify the old theological error that sex, even within marriage, is sin. Also helped a new conscience for women so that they felt that they are not just the objects of men's sexual pleasures, and also helped to develop the contraceptives and the pills and so on, and you can listen, it that reduced the number of children at home. But on the other hand, you will feel that, you will see that many single women or mothers showed up and bringing back to their own parents the mission of raising their children. It might be something a little bit surprising, but it was not simply a personal matter or family matter, but much money of the government had to be, or much of the public funds had to be put in this new trend. At the same time, I am on line 31, while mass media promotes extramarital sexual practices, governments seek to create abstinence-free sexual education. It's interesting that in his State of the Union address of January 24, 1995, President Bill Clinton referred to an epidemic of teen pregnancies and births where there is no marriage as our most serious social problem. Well, then, in response to his address, there was the National Campaign of Preventing Pregnancy was created, and you can see, you can access the webpage that I list at a footnote. Just to have an idea, at the beginning of this year, the Brazilian government distributed 7 million free condoms for the carnival over there. And some people were, this morning it was mentioned about different genders. I don't know if you came across with this, but mid last year, the Telegraph reported that in the British Facebook, you can choose today between one of 71 different gender options. So they say that up to that time, the American Facebook had 50, but they in England decided to add 21 more. So while the industrial and feminist revolutions created or tried to distance or tended to distance family members, the sexual revolution also affected marriage in the sense of not getting married and also having children outside marriage, and there are many other points that we already mentioned. Well, okay. We have always to blame time. But time is always the same. The problem is that what we have. Is that to the end? Okay. No questions. Technological revolution. The technological revolution developed cameras, camcorders, that help to register some significant family moments, perpetuate them. Also medical and surgical equipments, transportation, and so on. But you know that one of the most significant developments of all times was the invention of the plastic. It changed completely. In the past, things were made of a certain kind of metal or so on, more expensive. But with the plastic, it's easier to buy for families that do not cannot afford the metal stuff. But it also helped to generate ideology. I am on page 7 now, line 2, of the transient and disposable. I once heard a story that I really like very much, saying that in the Brazilian culture, coffee filters were made out of cloth in the past. It was used, washed, and put there to dry, and used day after day, week after week, and so on, year after year. But when those filters could no longer be used and had to be discarded, the family got very sad. They had to grieve because the filter was a member of the family. But today, the world is different. They are made out of paper. You use it, and you are expected to put in the trash bin. If you live there somewhere, people get angry and say, well, this is really, this is not a place. As we dispose things, we do with people as well. And that has helped to generate a culture of divorce. There is an old book, a book from 1997 by Barbara Whitehead. And she says that much of the literature on divorce has tried to hide or covering up the effects of divorce. Usually what goes is you speak to the children, it's better for your parents to get divorced and so, and they put just a positive side and not a negative one. So as I want to have a new car, new furniture, I want to have a new spouse also. And that has been the side effect of it. And then the final one is the cyber digital revolution. I decide to combine both, put them together, not to have 6, but only 5 here. And you know the development of the computers in the 60s for military purposes, and then later on for academic, and finally in the 90s, the World Wide Web. The positive side of this revolution is that it helped to bring together people that are far away, family members. Now, if I want, I can talk with my wife right away using FaceTime or any other device. So you are more together now. But at the same time, you have seen people that in the living room are there, not speaking at all, but just using their cell phone or whatever other device. At the same time, much of the relationship is despersonalized. If I face marriage problems today or in my family, instead of solving it, I can just go to the Second Life. Although the Second Life is no longer as popular as it used to be, but it still exists. And there I can have a nice, wonderful family. And also I can be very, very famous, to have a position that I don't have here. And you have then the cyber sex. And it's interesting that some studies show that 1/3 of the internet today is run by porno sites. And there in the cyberspace, I don't need to face the risks. People might not know what I am doing. And this has a strong influence on the family and relationships. You know, of course, you have many other things, even sex with robots and so on, and all kinds of different devices that have been created to stimulate the sexual behavior. Let's just go to the final remarks on page 10. A healthy and enduring personal relationship between parents and children is indispensable for family happiness. In some ways, the quality of such relationships has improved significantly in the last 200 years. But we cannot close our eyes to the ideological and behavioral tendencies that are eroding the stability of Western families. As previously indicated, the industrial and feminist revolutions have distanced some family members from the home circle. With its emphasis on free love, the sexual revolution fragmented many already established families and inhibited the formation of new conventional families. The technological revolution helped to generate a transient and disposable ideology that we see exemplified in the hookup culture among singles and the divorce among married persons. This revolution ended up also replacing working labor with sophisticated machines, generating massive unemployment and financial crisis in many families. In its turn, the cyber-digital revolution was able to reunite geographically many parents and children under the same roof, but ended up distancing them socially and by unlimited conventional through communication forms such as social media. Furthermore, many people have depersonalized their sexual activity through the use of cyber or virtual sex. Undoubtedly, the family is a significant social institution that is facing serious crises within Western civilization. The five revolutions addressed in this article generated ideological and behavioral waves that have largely undermined the foundation of family life in contemporary society. To build an honest and stable society, we must first of all to solve our family problems, minimizing as much as possible the negative impact of these revolutions on the family. Today's society and the world at large desperately need better structured families who can become models for generations to come. In a world as complex as this, we should help couples and families in our churches to take advantage of the positive legacy brought about by the aforementioned revolutions, without allowing the negative components of those revolutions to deteriorate our relationships. After all, our eschatological mission comprises the important task of turning the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers.